This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
My ambitions are to become a Champions League manager.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast, Dean Smith Exodus special. Joining me to discuss the fallout of the departed Dean Smith, Mr. Dan Rogers, Mr. Chris Bird, and Mr. Phil Shaw. Welcome
hello,
back.
Hello, hello,
hello.
Welcome back from literally 5 seconds ago when we recorded the last main show.
Still good to be here.
Oh, he's still here, yeah. I thought you'd given up on us.
No. I'm not like Christian Persler was with Dean Smith. Too soon.
from the top, let's. What were your reactions from the off to this decision? Were you in the camp that thought that he needed to go? Were you surprised? Do you think that he should have had longer? What's your kind of immediate take?
Probably all of the above, to be honest. It was I saw the reasons for him. It wasn't a massive surprise, but I was also a little bit surprised. But you thought, well, it's not like it hasn't been coming.
What would you have done?
I thought they potentially would have given him till Christmas. But I think by then your season's coming unravelled very quickly if it continues the way it's going. So
we'd have been relegated by then.
So I understand that they're probably thinking, well,
we still will be.
Yeah. With an international break, they probably thought, actually, now's probably as good a time as any to do it.
Isn't that a cliche, though? Because that 2 weeks isn't really going to save you. I mean, if you're going to sack a manager, always do fucking due diligence and tap up somebody to take over. You don't just chop them clean and then go, oh shit, oh luckily there's an international break,
like Spurs have done.
But they were wise to get ahead of everybody just to get the best available manager there was. So
yeah, we've got to get Mick McCarthy in on the sly.
We're going to compete with Norwich and Newcastle, but Newcastle have picked up Eddie Howe,
which is a good move, I would say.
Phil, you wanted to get rid of him, in his first season.
this is hard for me because it's like he had won me over. I thought, right, you've got over the rocky spell. It's like there's something there, and then it's the lack of availability of a replacement that surprised me. I mean, the way they were playing, you can't play like that for many more games. The team, something's very wrong, and the only thing you can change is the manager. I mean, you can't just sack all the players. So,
yeah.
But again, you're just looking at it and going, right, somebody has to be ready to just walk in and sort this out. But there's nobody there. You know there's nobody there because there's no announcement. There's no rumblings of an announcement. There's nothing. There's just wishy-washy. I want this one. I want that one.
Because there is an interesting situation, and we'll get on to replacements. But, I mean, Villa, the hierarchy, are all about progress. And, you know, this is the reason that Persler's put out, that Smith wasn't making progress, so off he goes. But we're also in a situation where we need a firefighter to save us this season as well. So can you get somebody who can do both tasks? I'm not so sure. But Dan, what was your take on this?
No, absolutely wasn't surprised. And that's in part because of the reasons you said. I think that 2021 had...
So you barely blinked when you heard the news.
I wasn't surprised. No, not at all, really. And I think that in some respects, I can see where Chris is coming from, that given, I think, especially when you look at the obituary the club put out for Dean Smith in the video they put on Twitter,
yeah.
it was that there were some highs along the way. And I, as much as anyone, I mean, Christ, we were a shambles when he joined the club. And to get us promoted was nothing short of a miracle. I think staying up equally as much of a miracle. Yeah. Thank you. Orian Neyland for... for that,
breaking the technology.
And Trezeguet, yeah.
Trezeguet, there are things not to be forgotten about that. With that said, I think we badly lost our way. I think that there's things on off the pitch as much as on. I think Smith, you know, you let it go to Christmas, and I think you could be in a situation where you're in a, you know. You could be in a relegation dogfight very easily in this division, and it's merciless. And I think we've seen, you know, you can't put out displays like you did against West Ham. Definitely not like we saw at St Mary's, because you're
Arsenal.
Arsenal. Yeah. There were moments across, you know, in recent memory. I think that you can't understate how damaging the late defeat against Wolves was, and it translated into the body language of the players. The post-match interviews had become confusing, as confusing as our tactics and our objectives. So I wasn't surprised. I didn't want to see him go, but it got to the point where, well, parking sentiment, well, you know, what's the plan? And someone had to make a big call, and they made it.
I mean, to me... I mean, I remember, Dan, when we were in the manager hunt, and Smith was on the radar, and everybody was saying he was like the second coming, in terms of he will make us, you know, play total football and all this kind of
shit.
And we would question, well, normally when you get a manager from the lower leagues, and, you know, we were in the lower leagues in the Championship, but we obviously had grand designs on the Premier League, and, you know, that we're looking for the next few seasons, that you get somebody who has winning in his DNA, if they're a talented...
pedigree as well, I think we turned
pedigree
it, yeah.
From the lower leagues, you are picking somebody who has got promotions to their name, or has, you know, have done amazing things in the lower leagues that suggests that it's in their DNA to do better higher up. Now, our concern with Smith, on the tin, it was saying wonderful attacking football, but credential-wise, it was like, what, he'd never finish higher than 7th or 8th for Warsaw or Brentford. Flash forward, hindsight, and you see Brentford performing even better without Smith and finally getting promoted and getting, you know, in the playoffs last time. So outperforming what he ever did. And also, they actually finished 5th the season before he came in. So they were better before he came in and after he came in. So that was a bit of a red flag. But at the same time, one of the things I put forward was, because he has, you know, this style, which we witnessed as Villa fans, you know, to our horror, as we were getting beaten regularly by Brentford, that you thought, well, actually, maybe these lower leagues aren't where his ethos really flourishes. Maybe he needs the canvas of the Premier League, and i.e. the canvas of better players, to actually really fulfill his potential. So that was where, you know, I was saying, well, yeah, it's worth a shot. And you got this idea, you know, Villa supporting manager, let's buy into this romanticism. And he was obviously starting on a sticky wicket, although it was quite an expensively assembled squad comparatively to the Championship. Now, you know, he made some pivotal changes. He actually, when Grealish came back from injury, made him captain. He actually gave Grealish some fundamental advice, which Grealish really should have known, that might be a good idea to score a few goals and chip in with assists. I mean, that's how you're going to become a burly big shot. It's all right having a lot of hype, but you need end product as well. And that seemed to kick on Grealish a bit more. The fact that he switched it from being a bit naive, this all-out attacking ethos, and if you're 1-0 up, you should go for the seconds, that's the best form of defence, that's not going to play out in the Premier League. And that from the first game against Spurs, we saw that in full flow. But at the same time, surviving that relegation, that I thought that's the hardest task he's going to have at Villa, is how he got us out of that relegation. We were dead and buried.
It was a miracle.
It was a miracle because, what was it, four games to go? After that Everton game, I thought, that's it, I think.
A couple of things happened. We had a remarkable U-turn in form because we didn't look like beating anyone, and Watford sacked Pearson for absolutely no reason. And that was the moment where you thought, no way. And to be fair to Smith and the coaching staff and the players, and Trezeguet, which I can't say.
Especially Trezeguet.
Trezeguet became Beckenbauer.
Well, that's what's happened. He's still injured. That's what's gone wrong.
He is, yeah. And Hourihan doesn't get a lot of credit, but all the assists in that period were him. Yeah.
They were huge.
Huge assists.
But it gave you one of those things you doubted. Does Smith have the minerals when the going gets tough?
Yeah, they dug in.
So the first tick is he won that playoff final. That was he got us over the line. That was the first test because nothing on his CV suggested he could. Then that survival, you thought that's as rough as it gets. He came up with a plan. Mm-hmm. He found balance. Finally, he found defensive balance and actually created a very decent, by any standard in the Premier League, defensive unit. So that was the foundation. Fast forward to this season where you looked at the pre-season problems, the COVID situation with the double friendly being postponed, cancelled. And you're thinking, well, we've got a solid defence. So while we wait for these glittery £30 million players to get up to speed and give us our full Grealish replacement stroke improvement, at least we'll be solid and not easy to beat. And we got dismantled by Watford. You brush that one off and just say, first game of the season, anything can happen, freak results, blah, blah, blah. And then it seemed to be going all right. The weird thing is, if you're a Villa season ticket holder and you just go to see the home games, that's it. You've actually only witnessed 100 minutes, let's say 10 minutes against Wolves and the 90 minutes against West Ham of adversity. And so the next thing you know, Smith's gone. And it's been weird, hasn't it? Because we've been playing once at Villa Park every month.
Very strange.
There's no kind of flow. So, I mean, when I leave a match, I say to the guy next to me, see you next month.
See you next year.
I've said that the last couple of games. So now you go back and there's different manager. It's been quite weird. So you haven't had that being dragged over the coals and the suffering of like McLeish or Bruce or Lambert.
the suffering is important as a Villa fan, isn't it? Because I think we said, and forgive me, it must have been in the previous episode now, but football fans are sometimes accused of not having very short memories. I feel we have good memories of where we don't want to be. And that's because it is the pained. I mean, prior to recording, we were talking about, Ron Atkinson's demise, over a period of, it was a long run of defeats. And, it does feel, and I think that the Smith departure does feel different because of the disconnection, if you like, through COVID and the strange fixtures and how it's fallen. It does feel very strange, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, just to tick off the Ron Atkinson mention, there was a similar. I mean, Ron Atkinson was much loved at the time. I mean, because as well as being charismatic, he'd taken us to second in the league in a title race we perhaps should have won, which was Alex Ferguson's first title win and kickstarted their dynasty. If we'd won that, who knows what would have happened. Then we won the cup, League Cup against him in the next season. And then you start off 94-95. First five games of that season, unbeaten. Drew the first three, then won two, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And you're thinking, well, right, we've established ourselves here as one of the big dogs of the early Premier League term. And then out of nowhere, Atkinson goes on a run where we lose 9 out of 10 games. And that anomaly was a draw. So it's 1 point out of 10 games. And after we got beat by Wimbledon, I always remember it. And, you get the news that Atkinson's gone and you're kind of stunned because you're like, what just happened?
There is a
he
weird.
He was good. We all loved him. He was great. Yeah. He brought us trophies, brought us great times. We brought us success. And then within such a short space of time, consecutive games, it just went.
That had been a very ageing team, wasn't it? That was, your Ray Houghtons, your Dean Saunders.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the span of time.
Yeah.
But there is a synergy there, though, isn't there? Looking ahead now at our fixture list, could Smith not have found himself in that Atkinson zone again? Inevitably.
Oh, yeah.
Inevitably, rather than...
yeah.
I mean, not that I'm the advocate of the 10-game losing streak or anything. No.
Wait, I think you did mention that in a Christmas special. I think you brought it into the consciousness of the universe.
I'm back to deliver it like the Grim Reaper.
I mean, Bruno Fernandes' penalty hasn't even landed yet and Smith's gone. That's just what it feels like.
That victory feels like a long time ago.
You know, it's precarious now. If Brighton scored the first goal at Villa Park, you could see Brighton winning that one. Defensively very organised, very sound. Then Palace away. Then you've got Manchester City, Leicester, Liverpool, and that could easily be a 10-game losing streak, judging by what we've been seeing the last few weeks. And then suddenly Smith's not there to dig himself out or tweak it or however you want to phrase it and hopefully get his, you know, players back. My point of view, I was expecting at least the end of November. But also I'm thinking, well, this isn't on Smith's shoulders exclusively.
No, not at all.
We discussed this in the other show about the coaches, how there's no fluidity. They don't seem to be on the same wavelength. It seems stagnated. We mentioned in a previous show, it's like almost like NFL where they're calling plays on set pieces and stuff. I mean, we saw
the note
against Southampton. And you just saw these players are not just playing freely and then it's not a well-drilled unit. They're almost making it up as, well, they're literally making it up as they go along. And you just got a sense all was not well. It was strange because we've seen Smith beat five of the top six. We've had great wins and performances that showed you the potential of what could happen. To the extent that you believed that this Villa team or the evolution of this Villa team could get into Europe. Now, and this is what, you know, is very much the Christian Perslow and the new owners were all banking on this. This was their trump card. The Dean Smith was their man. And now you got to rip the whole thing up. So they're just admitting they've made a mistake. And there's got to be damage limitation there because we are a relegation contender. And any complacency thinking we're not will end us up in the bottom three.
And I do think that's what's provoked the reaction. That I think that you know, we were all sat at home last season watching us playing with a freedom. I mean, you just said a short while ago that, you know, you look at the Southampton game, we were paralysed as a team. We were incapable of doing anything creative. And yet, a mere matter of games and months ago, if you like, well, last season certainly, we played without any of that weight on our shoulders. We looked, you know, I genuinely think that teams feared us. You know, we were very, very dangerous on the break. You know, there were standout results. And the contrast that, you know, if you're looking at that from as an ownership or looking, you know, it was an unrecognisable Villa team, despite, and, you know, parking the Grealish thing for one moment. And, you know, despite adding talent to the squad, you know, in terms of creativity, at least. But I do think that it was undone and undermined by, I think, changes in terms of the backroom staff, but very, very damaging tinkering.
Yeah, because something went on with Richard O'Kelly that we don't know, because if he's suddenly deciding, oh yeah, I think it's time for retirement, I think I've run my course here, or the club have decided he's run his course, he goes a lot earlier in that summer than he did.
Yeah, you don't walk the week before the season.
The John Terry thing seems a bit kind of...
I wonder if they were set a target, you know, an actual, you know, I'm sure there's a season target of, you know, especially under the guise of continuous improvement, as Perslow repeats.
Because John Terry, I mean, the way it's been spun is like, oh, you know, I don't want to cause any disruption to you guys leaving the club mid-season to get another job. Don't worry about disruption, Terry. We'll handle that anyway. don't you worry about
that.
You just stay on board, mate. Leave when you want.
And he's still got no job?
Yeah, what's he done? He's just taken time off just to get into collecting NFTs or something.
Don't worry, I'll be back next week.
But so that seemed a bit weird. So there was obviously something going on here. And I mean, we used to joke that it was the Greek chorus last season. You'd have Smith with about four coaches and they're all taking about 5 minutes to make a substitution.
About three different iPads. And
That's what it used to take us, 80 minutes to make a bloody change.
And now it doesn't look like they're all kind of on side or working as a cohesive unit. But you've got to look at that Wolves 10 minutes and...
No, I don't want to.
If the dogheads want to take credit for getting rid of Smith, I think they've got it there.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're going to come on to Nanny McPhee now, but the sort of the prominence that he has. I mean, I talked about it whenever he was assistant manager in Northern Ireland. He was always in the ear of Michael O'Neill, it was then. He was almost like the assistant instead of the set piece coach. And, you know, I joked that Northern Ireland didn't concede from set pieces, but I've just had a quick look at what the back five was at the time. And it reminds me of when Wenger came in the Arsenal, he inherited, you know, a really good back five and didn't change it. The Northern Ireland back five at the time was Johnny Evans, McCauley, Cathcart and Aaron Hughes. I mean, steady. Yeah. They're not going to concede from set pieces. They're going to head everything away, kick everything away. So McPhee stayed there, what, 5 years, built his reputation as a set piece person. And now whenever it's actually been challenged, I mean, that was the Wolves game was the end of McPhee, because set pieces, you've Danny Ings and you've Ollie Watkins, you know, marking at the back stick. It's not, it shouldn't be. It just shouldn't be.
Yeah. And also, that, I mean, it's a kind of a, when you're watching the touchline, it used to be Neil Cutler was always in the ear of Smith. And I mean, after the playoff final, I bumped into him at the club's hotel and I asked him, I said, I mean, in a jokingly fashion, I said, you know, why are you always whispering in Dean Smith's ear during the game? Because, you know, it's not the common thing for goalkeeping coaches to do. He's like coaching the whole game. It's not just, it's nothing to do with goalkeeping. And he said, you know, you've got to make yourself look busy, haven't you? I mean, you know, we were just like joking. But here we have another situation where the fucking set piece coach is constantly standing next to Smith and in his ear.
And taking credit for completely innocuous run-of-the-mill parts of the football game as well, that just because someone scores a header or a, you know, like the house, I was watching a rerun of the house goal against Manchester United and it was celebrated as though he'd actually headed it in himself. And it was the most near post mundane header. You know, it was a great.
Yeah. Did you see Alex Ferguson standing there with minor coaches around him constantly?
And this is maybe the problem. Would Smith have said no to anything? I mean, this is his too nice persona coming back to haunt him by saying, oh, Dean, we're bringing in a set piece coach. Is that okay? Yeah. Richard O'Kelly has to go, though, because, I mean, he'll just get in the way. Oh, okay, yeah.
Rich doesn't buy into our analytics way. It's the modern way. He's got to go. He's a bit of a dinosaur.
Yeah.
He's too old.
That's what they would think.
You just think.
Bit of ageism. Casual ageism.
Yep. It's just like there had to be a point in time where Smith went, you know what? No, we don't need him. I think it was working okay. We don't need this.
It was just a symptom, wasn't it?
Too many cooks.
Yeah, exactly. Very that. So. Exactly.
I'm trying to reinvent the wheel. You know, when you've, as I said in the previous show we did, you know, when you've had some massive transitions happen over the summer period, the last thing you need to do is start tweaking things that you don't need to tweak, because then the players get confused with the message. They don't even know what the message is half the time, potentially.
And it plants that seed of doubt. The other person who, personally, I've got nothing against him, but you've got a very, very well-respected coach in Shakespeare also whispering in Smith's ear. And it must bring some indecision that, you know, Smith's got to where he has by making his own calls, if you like. And all of a sudden you've got Nanny McPhee, Shakespeare and company.
But this is during a game. Yeah. I would expect this kind of input on the training grounds and in the build up, etc. But during game, I never saw a manager court counsel as much as he did. And
unless he wants the stats, you know, they'll have people up in the stand, won't they, doing their real time analytics, and they'll be straight in the ear of. I know it usually used to be John Terry, didn't it? He was always on his little mic thing, so they'll be constantly. But you got to pick your moments. You can't just run a game through a bloody Excel spreadsheet. That's just champ manager. You've actually got to see it with your eyes and go, okay, this isn't working.
Before we go on with the show, I just want to say a thank you to Penfold for supporting this episode. Penfold is a flexible pension that's easy to set up and effortless to use. If you are self-employed or haven't got a pension, then it's definitely worth checking into. The full flexibility allows you to change the amount you put in. If you want to do it monthly, you can put it on ICE. Also, you get access to the government 25% bonus on everything you put in, as well as the interest that will compound from whichever investment fund you select. There's a choice of six, and I think level four, which is the higher risk, is actually been one of the top performing pension plans over the last 5 years. It's very easy to do. I actually have one myself. That's why I actually approached Penfold to sponsor the podcast as another entity to help listeners with their finances. Of course, pensions, as with all investments, your capital is at risk and the value of what you put in may go up as well as down. But as a listener of the My Old Man Said podcast, you will get a £50 bonus if you go to getpenfold, PENFOLD.com/moms, MOMS. So check it out. And as I said, it literally just take 5 minutes to set up and you can run it from your mobile.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Let me just spin it a different way on Smith. Now, we joke about Lambert, McLeish.
No, we never joke about Lambert. Do you mind?
They had, it was frugal times. It wasn't the most free-flowing cash times. Now, Smith, in comparison, has had an easy wicket. In terms of recruitment, he's had millions.
Now we're into the meaty stuff.
And millions to spend on this outfit. And yes, you have to rebuild a squad. So there's got to be, certainly in the first season, a lot of money shelled out. But how many times did we break the record in the transfer window? He's had riches beyond most. And so in that context, it's like, well, fair enough.
Wesley. I'm just going to... Ah, Lisa Matter.
Well, I mean, in defending Smith, well, he could have gone earlier, but I think they threw Jesus in under the bus to kind of distract everybody.
Borja Baston.
Yeah, the way he was made out to be the reason of our almost relegation was a bit convenient for my liking. But anyway, back to Smith. He has had riches and, he's made them work at times, but this consistency was an issue. I mean, the start of this season, there's huge mitigating circumstances. Massive mitigating circumstances in terms of not being able to play your never starting the £100 million package of Buendia, Bailey and Ings, which, according to Pursley, was to replace Grealish in the aggregate. And, you know, we were missing half the team against Brentford. I mean, the COVID thing, I mean, I had a little outburst on the last podcast, or the second to last podcast, where I was saying the Premier League was so desperate not to pay back, rebate these millions and millions of pounds of TV revenue that they almost like strong-armed the government into allowing them to continue. And so you think, well, all these biosecure bubbles to have this privilege of carrying on, getting paid their ridiculous amounts of money, and then while everybody else can't, can't have such freedoms. And then every other week, I'm popping up to Villa Park and I look at the team sheet, and there's a couple of players missing from COVID. And there's so many breaches of the bubble that it just seems that there's been bad management there.
Certainly been ill discipline on and off the field. That's been a theme for, unfortunately, far too long.
And that is, it has become a part of the team's downfall because they've been missing key players at key times. I mean, we've been crying out for fucking Sanson to be the one, the promised man.
Who, sorry? Who?
And,
Burson.
And, the last reason why he was out, it was COVID related. And you think, oh, for fuck's sake. And, going back to There was an article in the Guardian by a guest writer from who scored that website, the stats website, where they said the whole premise of the article was the Villa didn't get a defensive midfielder, and that is the reason why Villa find themselves in this situation. Throw in a few stats, blah, blah, blah. There was no mention at all of Mr. Morgan Sanson, stroke Burson. And he was the man bought ahead of the transfer window. He would have come in the summer, but they got him in January because of the shit that was going down at Marseille at the time. They were quite smug that they got a player that was being touted around, I think when West Ham were interested in him, around, you know, 25, 30 million. They got him for, you know, 14 to 16.
Million a minute.
True that. And he came to the, I haven't got the exact quotes in front of me, but he said, I love this team spirit. I'm a warrior. You know, I want to fight, blah, blah, blah. And then obviously the club have sold him to Grealish because Grealish did an interview and he said, oh, you know, like we got, you know, there's good things happening here. We got Sanson in to bring some bite into the midfield. So this was a genuine box to box guy that would have been the man. And
just turns out he's made out of tracing paper.
And people were saying, oh, we need midfielders, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there was some guy, I saw some supporters say, you know, when we sold Grealish, we expected another 100 million to be spent. And it's like, well, saying every fan thought that. I mean, I'm sorry, but I put up multiple tweets saying, if you were listening to what Perslow said, and also I asked him how many players are coming in this window to his face, and he said, two or three. That was it. Ings was the, you know, that was it. In terms of big buys. And, you know, I got flack people saying, oh, no, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. There's going to be more players. Don't you worry. This is August the 5th. And nothing came in. Now, Smith said, I don't want to be stockpiling midfielders. And, you know, he's right in that context because he had Sanson who had been injured and, you know, hadn't done much last season. And you got McGinn, you got Douglas Luiz, you got Nakamba.
And you had some of the young lads who were starting to emerge.
Yeah, if you start getting other players in, then you suddenly you're really blocking the path of the young players. They had faith in Ramsey as well. And you're looking at McGinn, you're looking at Louise, you're thinking, you know, if Sanson comes good, that's, you know, that should be all right as a starting point anyway. But you don't want to be in that situation where we've been before, where you've got these players that you've cast aside already and you've got all this, you know, big wages on the spreadsheet, bad morale starting to bubble up, etc. So I think if Sanson was all right, you don't have a problem. So you're looking at the X has fallen on Smith, but you're looking at the recruitment team and going, well, hang on a minute. What's the Sanson story here? Hang on a minute. What's the Bailey story? He wasn't even fucking fit and only just started recently.
Signed in a shed.
Yeah. And what's with Buendia?
He's just not up to
speed. Best player for Norwich.
He wants to leave the pitch after an hour every game.
Yeah, he's not used to having to run.
There's other people culpable here. And this includes the players. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, some of the application on the field has been atrocious.
I mean, it was a good team spirit, I thought, this Villa team. I mean,
it's dissipated, hasn't it?
People in the club would say to me, this is the best it's been for, you know, quite a while, blah, blah, blah. And now you can just see through the cracks. I mean, even Mings's farewell to Dean Smith message, just short and sharp.
See ya. No, and I think that's, I mean, we've covered many of these Villa squads where you, I mean, we're going back to pre-relegation or the relegation season, as much as we might not want to, that
we're experts.
We are.
None of these like Larry come lately. We'll do a podcast when we're winning.
Happy clappers.
No yogurt for us.
Yeah, we found one at rock bottom.
We were there. We were there when we thought that Micah Richards would be a good idea and et al. We've been through
Les Scott might come good.
Well, but that really was the doldrums and
at the moment it's a minor flesh wound.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll take our pound of flesh. We've got long memories and I think the way that Smith has lost his way so badly here is almost part of the frustration, isn't it? That you know, it was not so long ago we were promised a theme park by a Chinese phantom. People need to get some perspective on one hand. Yeah, I'm back.
Is he still incarcerated?
You can roll that. Was it the James Bond? Yeah, Lofeld music now. Where were we?
I don't know. I'm just going to throw this one in. This wasn't like Dean Smith sacked after the game. This was, let's let him have a Saturday night out. Let him walk the dog Sunday morning, then we'll sack him. So they've obviously had talks. Now, what do you think Smith's argument for staying was?
You've handcuffed me to idiots. Where's my coaching staff? What have you done to them? You got rid of them?
He hasn't been able to play his best players. You've sold my, arguably the best player the club's had in the last 10 or 15 years.
6 weeks ago, just beaten Everton and beaten Manchester United.
Yep.
And what's going on?
And possibly, where do you guys realistically see your ambitions? You know, you're talking about Europe, but...
That's a big part of this.
With the squad we have... or had in August, was that going to be realistic? Surely they must have known that this is, we'd predicted it from pre-season, that it's going to be a bumpy ride till Christmas. We didn't think it'd be this bad, to be frank.
I did.
Knew we weren't. We weren't. But you thought that, we'd said probably every pod, we will get better in the second half of the season. I still think we probably will. But surely they mustn't have known, oh yeah, we'll be in and around the top six from the word go. Like, did they just expect Leon Bailey to arrive from a new league?
From a shed.
And hit the ground running.
Lang was lying and go, yeah, no, he's good, he's ready to go, he's all right.
It's great. It's...
Or his stepdad told Lang from his shed. that was some of the most ridiculous signing of a player I've ever seen. When I saw that, the shed footage on YouTube, I'm just thinking,
are we signing Ali Dyer?
How many millions is he? How many millions is he again? Fucking hell.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, whatever manager, in the circumstances that Smith had in terms of the pre-season, in terms of the availability of players.
And look, the international breaks, he's had no time with the players. Martinez said that, didn't he, before Southampton, that we've barely trained together as a squad.
Well, and the South American lads have been in South America surely as much as they have been in Estonia. And as much as they have in
Croatia.
Birmingham. Croatia. And, yeah.
I would have played hardball with them in that initial one.
Yep.
And I'd have kicked some asses over this COVID. You can't have players turning up with COVID all the fucking time.
No.
Doesn't the penny drop the first time it happened? I mean, they closed the camp down twice.
This is what happened. All these things that we tried to ignore, which is the signing of Bailey, which was a bit panicked in the shed. Then the friendlies that were postponed with COVID. Then just getting Salernitana and their Zeus kits over just for a Sunday kickabout. And we all thought, oh, yes, it's fine. We'll be well prepared for the start of the season.
Bearing in mind, Smith had 10 days of isolation himself, hadn't he?
Yeah.
You have to think, what manager would let this happen? Again, I'm coming back to the thing, is it as niceness as general trying to get by, trying to make things work, trying to always see the best in what's going on around him that sort of has done for him in the end? He should have put his foot down at some stage.
That's settled him. Nigel Pearson is. Finally.
You ostrich.
People to the floor.
Yeah.
He would have been a Villa manager already if it wasn't for the Chinese phantom deciding he wanted... a bit of glitter with old Roberto Di Matteo, who I completely forget every time I mention his name, that he was a manager of Aston Villa.
And responsible for Henry Lansbury.
And Aaron Shishbola.
Oh.
There was mitigating circumstances for Smith to hang on, but to me, the whole thing, it was a bit wishy-washy in terms of there was a spectrum of some of the scalps he took and the performances where you saw the potential, but it was never backed up with consistency and pragmatism, I think. That Wolves game should have been shut down.
Even when it goes to 2-1, it's like, right, okay, we've given away a stupid consolation. Now we're going to shut the game down as a contest, and we didn't.
Wolves was a good microcosm of it, really, because they had that, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but, I mean, Traore should have put them ahead. Inexplicably, burst. Oh, I mean, he did it on more than one occasion, didn't he? And if his finishing was any good, he would be playing for a better club. but to be worked out like we were that in the second half when we should have been cruising. I mean, as you say, we game management, just shut up shop and you've won the game. But I think that will stand as the moment where psychologically. Smith's tenure ended, I suppose, for the players as much as him. I would mark that moment.
And that was the day that Edens was there. That was probably the day where the red flags were like, wow, I've flown in for this. Yeah. What on earth is going on?
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Because that just shouldn't happen on your watch, should it?
It's not. And you're not talking about Villa playing vintage Man United of old, where it used to happen yearly. This is against a pretty average at that time Wolves team, who have now gone on to have a good run of form, but they weren't great on the day. They were average, and they just managed to get a bit of a lucky break and then suddenly ran through us.
And you saw the week before, well, the game before against Spurs, where same thing, you back in it and you think, oh, I think we're going to get something from this game now. I mean, being at the game, you just, because you saw the first 20 minutes and you thought, oh, we're in control of this. And there was a bit of confidence going into that game because we'd beaten Manchester United.
Almost, there was expectation.
And beaten Everton, yeah. And there was a bit of complacency amongst fans because they were expecting to do something against Spurs.
It was a dour performance.
But once, and Spurs were a team bereft of confidence as well. They were playing within themselves. But once we got that equaliser, you thought we should get something here. But the naivety of how open we were still and how far those fullbacks were still playing, again, game management. But you kind of let that one slide because it's fucking Spurs. They've got world-class players. Son is one of the best in the league. And so you kind of give him a pass for that. And then Wolves, it just happens again. And as you said, Dan, they weren't actually the greatest team, even though they're, you know, they're pretty organised. They know what they're doing.
Well, goodness sake, what's the Wolves manager called?
Bruno Lange.
Yeah, he worked out on 70 minutes that they were not out of the game at 2-0. And that was, again, one of those moments where, you know, it bled into the Arsenal game. That the West Ham game was, it was clear after 5 minutes that we needed to change change off our shape. You know, you don't have to necessarily change people, but it was glaring. You know, and the difference between the West Ham and the Wolves game, to strike a contrast, was West Ham punished us mercilessly. You know, Antonio, you know, that was the game he opted to drop Mings. You know, a physical game. A
ridiculous decision.
You know, mental. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's just Shearer and Hewitt again, isn't it? You've that picture of Hewitt behind, or sorry, Shearer behind Hewitt on that rainy night, just looking at him, and you're just going, Hewitt's days are numbered. But then, even worse than that, Konsa gets sent off and he has to bring Mings on. I mean, if he's going to stick to his guns, he brings on Twanzebe, although that would have got even worse, but still.
No, absolutely right. And that's where bad luck compounds bad decisions that...
Yeah, agreed. You're not helping yourself.
Well, it doesn't allow any space for it. That's the thing.
No.
What one thing that was kind of set in stone was, and the kind of rock of why Villa were half decent in the last year or so, was the Mings and Konsa centre-back partnership. So in the first game, you're reverting back to a back four after this kind of back three, which all three centre-backs were uncomfortable. Konsa was in no man's land a lot of the times. And, you know, Mings has pulled over so much because of target's positioning that you think, right, if we're going back to the back four, let's play the best back four that we've got that's tried and tested, which is Mings alongside Konsa. And when he dropped him, I just thought, why are you going weak against West Ham? West Ham, like one of the best, they're hot right now. One of the best teams. And that, you know, lost me there a bit.
And in Antonio, a technically excellent striker at the peak of his physical power, it was, you know, very different players, but it would be like doing the same thing against a Drogba or a, you know, it struck me as a, he was making decisions based upon the old system and the old mistakes rather than, as you say, going, do you know what, we'll go back to what we knew worked and start afresh. And that will have resonated through the squad that it coincided with, and I forget the game now, where Mings's temperament showed a couple of times in those games where he made some poor on-field decisions. And there's the one where he throws the ball over the bar when he's already been booked and you think, what are you doing, man? You know, head's gone moment. But that's the kind of thing that, you know, a figurehead, you know, he's obviously, he's outspoken, but in a...
He's erudite and he's
eloquent, in an intellectual way. You know, he's not a stupid guy. And you think, you know, that the squad will be talking, and you think, does that will impact upon the standing that someone like Smith, who'd been, you know, relatively consistent to that point, and as I've said earlier in this piece, really, that it aligns with when your coaching staff are changed, you've got changing personnel, the results start falling apart, strange decisions are being made, and then before you know it, you're five games deep.
Yeah, and your senior players are stood there on the pitch arguing, going, what are we doing here? We don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, get the ball in the fucking box, as McGinn said.
As McGinn clearly did say, didn't he? Just before half-time at Southampton.
This is the thing. These coaching staff trying to reinvent the wheel and actually making us less effective, putting indecision in the players' minds. They don't know what the fuck's going on. You don't recognise them from previous performances. Not as if they're all playing, 10 out of 10 games, but you know there's a level and what their consistency level is, and you're just not actually even seeing that.
Well, I've spoke before. I mean, with Target, we've seen the biggest swing, if you like, in terms of overall performance and displays. I think Watkins is the subtle one, that there was this awkward combination that's been forced between him and Ings, that, you know, undoubtedly individually excellent strikers, and in no different way really to how Buendia's been deployed, just badly. You know, you're not playing to the player's strengths, but to persevere with something that clearly isn't working, it begs the
question.
Well, it begged the question at times, and as to what we must have been able to see that from the sidelines. But were we preoccupied with the idea that, well, we know what we're doing, we're, you know, we'll keep close counsel with the coaches and whatnot that we've got, when actually the glaringly obvious was pretty straightforward to rectify. You know, even if you'd have just gone, do you know what, we'll go back to the last thing that worked, and then we'll add in the new guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, as I've said before on this show recently, our best 11 players individually do not make up our best first 11 in terms of balance and formation. And that is something I think they've got wrong in the recruitment, because you want to get that best, your best 11 players that you've got, hopefully you've got them in the positions so it actually makes up a potentially a balanced team.
And none of us still, you know, into November, none of us know what our best team is yet. We haven't seen it. We don't know. We've got an idea what it could be, but no one really knows.
Oh, I do.
Oh, pray tell.
Whoever's going to come in next, what are they going to do with this misshapen bunch?
Well, this is the question I was asking myself, and why I was disappointed in the timing of Smith's dismissal. And this isn't a Smith in or Smith out conversation, because as we've been talking, and hopefully you've gauged, listener, There's pros and cons right across the board, and it's hard to have a distinct. I mean, the overall picture of Smith's full potential, shall we say, there is definitely potential there, but there's also weakness there. But my doubt was like, oh, we really hemorrhaging ourselves here, because we've got, this is no joke what we've got coming up. I mean, you know, I was saying we need points from these three November games, because December turns into a nightmare. Seven games, and you're starting with three of the toughest games of the season, if you count Leicester as one of those, the others being Liverpool and Manchester City. So this is, it's not going to look good. And you know how these things unfray, because confidence gets sapped, you suddenly get this losing mentality, teams turn up fancying to beat you, and it suddenly goes wrong very quick. And we've already seen infighting on the pitch. We've seen total indecision because the players don't know. I've got a fucking idea what's going on with the coaches. And if you take the only constant out, Smith, does this improve or hamper our chances of survival? Because I think that's my starting point at the moment, is how I'm thinking about the season is staying up. Because
I think new sort of laser-focused ideas from anyone will refresh the players, because they're not bad players, let's be frank. This is not a bad set of players. Just having an actual plan and sticking to it may work. I think
I need to see other people leave the club.
Management-wise, yeah, I think so. It's a case you need to bring somebody in who's bullish, who says, I'm coming in with my team. These are my guys. Like a Mourinho would do, you know, it'd be a clean slate. I'm the boss, and these are my guys, and these are our ideas. This is
so Mourinho is then.
And it's very simple. Yeah, Mourinho is.
That solves that in the podcast.
He just went to Roma just to get a bit of sun while the summer was in its dying embers.
Some nice food.
Yeah. But, you know, if it's not the right fit or there's no respond, it's a dangerous game. And if they start losing, because, you know, if you look at the bookies, the old five-game losing accumulator to turn it into a 10-game losing streak is kind of attractive at this moment.
It is hard to argue with that. I mean, somebody asked me on Twitter, they went, who's next for the Villa job? And I went, I mean, I don't know if he wants to quit boxing, but Canelo could do it. I wouldn't mind seeing him have a quick go. But no, in all seriousness, Chris is right. Someone needs to come in, and it is a put your foot down job. It's like,
they need to be in charge.
Yes, they do need to be in charge. They need to say, right, you're not good enough. You're not playing the right position. I don't even know if you're
I don't even know why Villa bought you.
Yes.
Are you
a common
still
question.
It does need to be as simple as that, yeah. I mean, because that's what happens at other clubs. I mean, Villa, you know, there's this myth of doing things the right way, but is it the right way?
Winning's the right way.
Don't bother coming back from your shed in Jamaica. dear.
But looking down the candidates, I don't know.
It's not like, you know, for example, when, say, O'Leary left and everyone was like, right, O'Neill is the man. This, and everyone would go, well, he's the obvious fit. There is no obvious fit there where you go, he's a banker, he'll be good. There's loads of guys who I think are sideward steps. There's lots of unprovens. There's not many guys who are like, yeah, he's done it before at the level we are and at the level we want to be.
Or managers that are promising that we could actually basically take off a team.
Prize away.
Big dog style.
I'm bounded by the fact that, as we rightly observed earlier, that you've got to arrest a concerning slide first and then align yourself with the continuous improvement master plan. Yeah. Not an easy task because you could find you could be the perfect person to turn things around in the short term, Big Sam, or
tactics Tim.
Listen, this is I mean, football's a very strange business at the moment, and business being the underlined word in that you know, short-termism could stretch even in this next phase, where I go back to what I said before, especially with the run of fixtures we've got now, the club cannot contemplate relegation.
If I was the most promising manager that was on Villa's list, and I was attached at a club, and Villa approached me, I'd look at the fixtures, and I would say, promise the wife a bit of a holiday early December. unfortunately, in my contract, I've got to have a
4 weeks notice,
which would get me out of that Liverpool, Manchester City, Leicester, and the first game would be against Norwich.
I just wait until after that Christmas run of games.
Dean Smith's first game at Carrow Road, I'm sure of this.
It's definitely a difficult wicket because you're coming into a club with highly ambitious owners who've spent a lot of money. They're very, very, you know, they've got high expectations. The fan base have a high expectation. You know, the disparity of where we want to be to the reality of where we are at the moment is as big as it's been in a long time.
Another factor, sorry to jump in, Chris, is that this isn't a universally accepted decision.
Yeah.
And everyone's absolutely entitled to their opinion. Many, many people listening to this, I'm sure, will not be impressed with the decision, or will be undecided still, or very much of the opinion that he should be given more time. But we are where we are, and it's a big call on the club's part. But my reason for mentioning it is that for the first time, it puts a otherwise positive ownership and hierarchy at potential odds with the fan base after a huge recovery.
100% under the spotlight now. And what I was going to add to that was, if you were buying into Villa on the up, you're looking at last season, how we faded off at the end of the season. Not the first manager to have a season of two halves. How we started badly in the first one, but it recovered. You're putting all this down to teething problems, and you understand the situation, rebuilding a squad in the Premier League, having to try to get it up to speed, losing a few key players last season, this season, nightmare of mitigating circumstances. So you can see the progress, and you know this isn't going to be a success overnight, because we weren't like, for example, Leicester, where they won consecutive titles, moved up the leagues, they built unity and a uniform team that had a spirit.
Even Brentford.
Even Brentford. So when they got promoted into the Premier League, they had that season of adjustment, which Villa have had, when they got promoted the time before this time, you know, back in the Graham Taylor years. But because they had that core of unity, because they'd played together, a lot of those players, for, you know, a few seasons, and bonded, they went on to win the league. Now, I thought Villa still had the remnants of the team that had gone on that championship journey, but that, you know, these were loans, like your Mings was a loan, El Ghazi was a loan. These are players that were put together. So you thought, well, now they're permanent. This is teething troubles as these players bond together, and anything that was kind of going wrong, you thought, well, no, Smith is still, you know, the revelation this year was we can beat the top six teams, like, regularly. And so that was another tick that we're going in the right direction. And these things, you saw the long-term picture. Now there is no long-term picture. That is the problem here. And as we've both, me and Dan have both referenced, there's that duality now of, you need somebody to save our fucking asses this season, but also kick on with a long-term plan of improvement.
And that's difficult, because a manager could come in and go, I like him and him, but those three guys have got to go. I'm going to need X amount of money. I need this player and this player. I mean, this is why I think they've moved now, because it allows somebody to come in, evaluate, get a plan ready for January. Bearing in mind, you're going to be going into the difficult market. It's difficult for everyone, whether you've got money or not. And some managers might just go, do you know what? It's a no from me.
Yeah, I mean, just end with Steven Gerrard is the a hype choice. I'm a bit uncomfortable with players who, former players who are really, it's in the same way that uncomfortable with people seeing don't look back in anger on the Holt when you know it's so synonymous with big, big Manchester City supporting band. It's like the Gerrard thing. It's like you just know where his heart is and what he's just waiting for Klopp to keel over.
Klopp to pop.
That's the end game.
And it'd be the same with Terry, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, in reality, yeah. The only one, obviously, with someone like a Lampard is, of course, he had his chance and relatively blew it.
So, well, I don't buy into that. It has to be one of our own. It's the allegiance is so strong.
Well, these are like club icons,
he's a one-man fucking team, isn't he? One-team man. So that's a weird... Yeah. And Terry would say the same thing. Okay, he had a brief dalliance with Villa, hence why we kind of can sleep at night with him being our coach. But as a manager, he's so... I mean, as soon as he left the club, it's all about Chelsea, you know, on the social medias or whatever. He's a Chelsea man and, you know, good luck to him. You completely understand why.
Gerrard Terry combo it is then.
Yeah. It's just a matter of who's the manager and who's the assistant.
I think the owners are looking at it going, we need like a sort of like a sexy appointment that's got
we
some
we need some razzmatazz. Because this is a different realm. You know, we're thinking, oh, Aston Villa, we won the European Cup or whatever. Every season that passes, we are, you know, the
further away
the
from
mass
it,
money in the TV rights is a great leveller. And Southampton, for example, they've made mincemeat out of us in the Premier League. They have a better record against Villa in the Premier League than we do against them. And recently, our record is shocking. So,
bearing in mind they're a team that went down to League One. Yeah.
So we are, you know, we're losing our gravitas quickly. And that's one of the reasons I like Dean Smith, because we were kind of doing our own thing. And
we were reinventing ourselves, weren't we?
Reinventing ourselves from within.
And the fans really bought into it, I think, and the players did. There was a real identity. Yeah.
I agree. And that's the great shame of this. And
I think it was given away too cheaply. That's why I'm disappointed. I think it's just you've thrown away the bigger picture too cheaply and you're starting from scratch. And that's kind of dangerous when you look at the landscape and the possibilities.
Oh, the changing manager at this stage brings with it, I wouldn't say greater risk, but definite risk.
There's just one question to ask. Dean Smith, underrated or overrated?
Overrated.
Why?
I'm going to go under.
I'm going to go over as well. I have to stick with my original opinion.
Yeah, well, I think the sacking him now is overrated.
The thing it goes, and this is a very simplistic thing. When he first joined Villa, that I remember mentioning on the podcast 3 years ago. 3 years ago.
Yeah.
That some Brentford fans, we were at the British Masters. And we happened to be stood next to some Brentford fans at the tea. And they said that when things are going well, Smith is an excellent manager. But when the chips are down, then you'll see. And they had nothing but, you know, they were really positive about him. But they made that distinction. And that was the thread, I feel, through his tenure at Villa. That there were those long periods where things did go awry. There were some highs and there were some things that I think that will... You know, we'll have positives about, but...
Well, I mean, I was surprised he got us out of relegation 100%.
Absolutely.
But I think I'll answer this question in the context of Aston Villa. He said he wants to be a Champions League manager. I would be surprised now if that ever happened. So in the context of that, and that's where Villa need to be because of the expectations that have arisen because of the new owners, I'm going to go overrated as well. Although I don't think this was the right time.
3-1 it is then.
That's making everybody, listeners, feel better about the second. I'm not happy about it. I'll tell you that. I am disappointed because this it's basically an admittance of failure by everybody else at the club. And after having Grealish taken away and now Smith, you've got the best scenario, fairy tale scenario that a Villa fan could ever have has just now been ripped apart. And we are now as faceless as any other fucking club, just, and this is what I hope doesn't happen, just wanting to survive and not get relegated, just to keep the business running with the TV revenue money, and the new managers will come and go every 2 years and the big wheel will keep turning. You know, we had something a bit different, that something we you could actually emotionally invest in, which just
it was almost like the purity
like
of football.
The good old days. And that's what...
There was almost a bit of envy in other fan
and
bases.
Yeah, other fans... I mean, there's a couple of Southampton fans I saw saying, I think you've dropped a bollock there. But yeah, there was the envy. You know, you go back a few months, people were kind of envious that we had this kind of utopian situation. But now it's just business, people. There's no loyalty. It's just business. If the people in power aren't doing the job, then they, you know where we, you know, they can go.
I mean, my final thought is that it isn't like we're in a scenario that Spurs had where in Nuno you've got a reasonable manager, but one that they weren't sure about. But as soon as they knew Conte was available, it was like, right, we're going in. We can get our guy. I don't see this as Villa where Perslow and those guys are going, we've got the guy we think we want here and this is the window to get him. I don't think it's that. There is no obvious fit here. There's no banker. Whoever comes in is a risk. And it could work. Hopefully, you know, touch wood, someone comes in sooner rather than later, hit the ground running, new manager bounce and all that sort of stuff. Everything's hunky-dory. But as Dan said a few times, we've got long memories.
So I'm just looking at the plan in front of us and from yesteryear, the under and over rated and a list of players.
Great names.
So I'm just thinking of if that was a list of potential old players to manage, I think John McCune would be the best.
The second.
Assistant manager Michael Oakes.
Who got scared in front of the whole team.
Michael Bradley.
Like Matt Target.
Oh dear. Well, it's going to be interesting, but we need an international break to kind of get over this.
I mean, we were looking forward to the international break before full steam ahead.
It's good to be back amongst you anyway.
Yeah, nice to speak to you, Dan.
Still feels like it's come out of nowhere because...
It does.
It's, relatively.
It's come up quickly, that's the thing, hasn't it? It's gone from being, I think, you know, you lose two or three games and it's a slump in form. Defeats 4 and 5 and you've lost your manager. That's a...
Weird.
It is weird.
Because Villa Park, and you know, you listen to the away fans at Southampton supporting Dean Smith, Villa Park supporting Dean Smith. You know, we went down to 10 men against West Ham. Dean Smith, Clapham Blue Army, up a halt for, you know, sustained length of time. And the thought hasn't even entertained my head in terms of, you know, it being a discussion as, I mean, there's people going Smith out on Twitter, but you don't know what the context there. They haven't got a real name. There's no consequence to their actions. You don't know if it's a 12-year-old kid. It's just somebody brought up on Football Manager where, you know, you get sacked after 4 games or whatever.
That's a reflection of the, as I mentioned earlier, the reconnection with the club. And that's why this is a pivotal moment for the hierarchy now, because they've got to, you've lost Grealish, which was that organic connection to the club where but with Smith, it was, you know, you had some of the pedigree where you were saying, right, you've dragged us to the Premier League and we've retained it and he's a fan and we're beating teams. And you say, well, if, you know, this is clearly progress overall and from where we'd been with a joke of an owner and, you know, countless managers and countless, frankly, players who didn't appear bothered or not to play for the shirt to in quite a quick period, that dissolving away, if you like. And I think the fear is that we don't want to go back there, but also we don't want to go back to a place where you don't feel... you don't feel that connection to your football club or that people care about your football club who are essentially custodians of it. So the next appointment is really important, not just because we don't want the season to become an absolute shambles, but because losing that, you know, and it's, you lose your fans again, and they're hard earned and easy lost.
Sorry, just to update the season ticket.
What's the waiting list count?
Season ticket waiting. Oh, it's gone up another 50,000. It's 135,000 at the moment. That's impressive. Because Villa fans, they just love this kind of shit. They all love suffering. And
that's a podcast title.
Queuing up to get the bed sheets out.
But yeah, so just to end, it was kind of a bolt out of the blue because 100 minutes of adversity at Villa Park, like essentially, I mean, you know, you go and watch us win shit games or whatever, you know, the Newcastle game, Everton didn't play very well for the first hour, then won the game. But that's the run of the mill. That's football. That's how it goes. So when I say adversity, that 10 minutes against Wolves and the West Ham game, and, you know, Villa get beat by West Ham, no biggie. They, you know, they've just beaten bloody Liverpool. And then you look at the away fixtures at the start of the season, first 6 away fixtures, 4 of them against the tops, you know, the Super League 6, Chelsea, Manchester United, Arsenal, Spurs. If you're telling me at the start of the season we're going to get 3 points from all those, I'm thinking, that's, you know, that's kind of par the course. If you get 3 draws, that's a decent return, historically anyway. So that's why it's weird, because did you expect to win all those four away games? No, you fucking didn't. Would you expect Villa to have lost a home game? Potentially, yes. Even, you know, potentially two. But it's just kind of, especially when, if you were told that the injury situation. So it is kind of a, that's why I think it's a bit rash. But people will say, well, you know, calendar year, 25 games, whatever, seven wins, whatever, whatever. But yeah, it's a season where, in that season, the thing that was making us tick was the Grealish-Barkley combo. Both got injured, bad times. Once the season fell away, seasons fall away. You either finish strongly because you're still after something, but that team, I mean, that's another thing about Smith, is the streak, there's bad streaks he goes on. So, you know, I'm not crying into my pillow tonight. It's like, well, he has his weaknesses, so yeah, but are you getting us a better manager? That is the thing that everybody at Smith out, never, not one of them came up with a suggestion. Not one of them had an idea, because it's easy to be negative and just say, yeah, Smith out, that's it. And that's the problem Aston Villa now have now, is to solve the problem of this season and get somebody in who can actually continue and improve the team, because we know what happens just based on the last 10 years if you don't get the fans buying into it. But as I've said, I think we've given up something, and it was probably worth giving it one more go, because the alternate's never going to be as good. But who knows?
Who knows indeed? And you would think, you know, as of the news breaking, and obviously they would have known beforehand, but there'll be a few of those players who were looking in the mirror going, yeah, I probably haven't showered myself in glory.
Oh, yeah, no, you can name a load of, there's only been probably Cash, Martinez,
that's probably Camber,
when he's had his moments.
Ings had a few good moments.
Yeah, Ings, but there's a few of those boys. I mean, Louise has been kind of steady, McGinn hot and cold, but, you know, the likes of Konsa, Target, to Nzebi, I don't know what's gone wrong there.
You look at the amount of guys we had last year who were like in the top 2, 3, 4, 5 in all their stat columns for their position, like headers won, all those sorts of things, all these barometers, and you think, yeah, these guys are doing it. You know, Konsa and Mings were right in the business end of all your lists. Watkins was scoring a goal every other week. You had Cash, Target on either side. You know, you had combinations all over the field. That's one of the big things for me as a team. And the manager's going to have to come in and go, I need to know what my best team is, and I need to know what my combinations are. I need to know how to get the best out of these guys and who to put with them.
Right, on that note, it's never dull. Please do become a My Old Man Said patron. Join us in Match Club, because it's going to be insane in the next few months. Go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the Patreon link there to find out more details. Right, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me to discuss Mr. Smith, and we do wish him well henceforth. Be interesting to see where he pops up next, but will he be in the Premier League? That is the question. Until next time, enjoy the international break. And it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
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 Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.